You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today is a special Friday edition. It won't be a three-hour show, but it'll be at least an hour, probably somewhere between an hour to 2 hours. They're running early in the Richland Chronicle office. That's actually good news, because sometimes they stay to 11, 11:30. It looks like tonight they'll probably get out about 7:30 to 8. At least that's the optimistic estimate. So I have at least an hour and a half, most likely, to do my broadcast. They'll give me the signal when I have to wrap it up. So I'm going to focus on one story that is the talk of the town, or the talk of the nation, both on talk radio and the news, and that is the announcement by Mitt Romney that he's decided not to run in 2016. That surprised a lot of people, because he started to make sounds a week ago that he was running. So I guess it's sort of like Hamlet. And now he's said, nope, not going to run in 2016. Now, why did he pull out? Money. Not hard to understand money. Yes, he's a very rich man. But when you're running for president, you need a lot of money. Upwards of $1 billion. He's not that rich. And I don't think he wants to spend all his money running for president. And the problem is, Jeb Bush, former governor of Florida, made it clear to the, what I call, and other people have called, the donor base, or the donor class, and they have them both in the Democratic and Republican Party. Surprisingly, it's a lot of times it's the same group of people that's sort of kept under the covers, because most of them tend to be, for example, in the financial services industry as heads, executives of your Wall Street firms, your investment bankers, your commercial bankers, stock brokerage, insurance companies, pension funds. They have the money. They earn a lot of money, they make a lot of money, and their executives can contribute a lot of money to campaigns. And that is where both Mitt Romney and recently Jeb Bush have spent a lot of time. So they had the same set of donors, or a lot of overlaps, maybe that's a better way to say it. And when Jeb Bush made it very, very clear that he was running, he can't formally announce for technical reasons, legal reasons, the money started to go to Jeb Bush. And that's why I think Mitt Romney had planned to run all along. I had no doubts that he was running in 2016. But the question was when he would be formally announcing it. And when he started to contact his donor base, was finding that many of them have already committed to Jeb Bush. That's not hard to understand. There's just so much money. There are just so many people that have the big bucks that can write the large checks, both to your campaign, to the party, as well as to PACs. And as rich as you are, unless you're really in the league of, let's say, a Bill Gates, where you have billions that you could at least theoretically give, I doubt seriously Bill Gates we give that much money. And I'm not sure he's even a Republican. Not that I care. But so that's my take, that he found out that Jeb Bush had aced him out by starting early. And that's a lesson to learn. If you're serious about running for president of the United States, in either party, start early. And what you need to be doing is crisscrossing the country, supporting other candidates, giving speeches, and that is appreciated. Now, I was listening to the Rush Limbaugh show. Now, I'm not a regular. At one time, I was a regular listener to Rush Limbaugh. Lately, I just simply have not had the time. So I catch bits and pieces of his show. And he sort of had an interesting take, but I disagree with it. He says, what we need is a conservative Republican to run for president and win. Now, if you would talk to me in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, even into 2000s, I would agree with you. I was a conservative, and I started being a Goldwater conservative. That didn't get very far, and supported Reagan. And by default, my only choices were Republicans. But the more and more I looked at the Republican candidates and what the Republican Party was doing in Congress, I left the Republican Party. Or better way to say it, as Reagan said it, paraphrasing Reagan, the Republican Party left me. Now, what am I talking about? What is the core, and I would even say the essential, there's several, I need to qualify this. What are some of the essential principles of being a conservative? In my mind, fiscal responsibility is up there. It's very high. I'm not saying it's number one, but it's the top three. And when you have a Republican Party where they have the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and you're still running deficits, there's a problem. And that problem became manifest during the presidency of George W. Bush. And the more I looked at it, I said, you know, the Democratic Party, they never try to balance the budget, and they're largely for welfare and more entitlement programs. The Republican Party, they're largely for warfare or defense spending. They don't call it warfare spending, but defense spending and more entitlements. So both parties, if you are honest and objective about it, are big spending parties. They're big government parties. They're not for limited government. And how bad is it? You know, you can have a balanced budget and have a very large government. They're not mutually exclusive. But both parties right now simply can't balance the budget and really have no intention to even try. Because if they were to try, they would dramatically have to cut spending. I mean real cuts, not this game that both parties play with the so-called congressional budget baseline, where they're arguing about the percentage rate of growth of spending, and where the Democrats might want 15% and the Republicans want 8, and then they settle for something in the middle, and then the Democrats will say you're cutting spending and the Republicans will say no, we're increasing it, but they're not cutting anything. They're growing government, and that's what we have. We have a two-party tyranny. Both parties are big spending government parties. They're growing the size, the scope of the government. You see it in more and more tax regulations, more and more regulations across the board, higher and higher taxes, spending increases for every department. Fiscal responsibility today is, for all practical purposes, a dead letter. And as far as I'm concerned, that fiscal responsibility is the core, the absolute essential requirement of any conservative is prudence and stewardship of the funds that are entrusted to you by the American taxpayer. But both parties have become addicted to other people's money, and they don't spend it wisely, and they're not good stewards. And both parties are guilty of it. The big spending under Bush was just continued and made worse under Obama. And whoever is the Republican nominee will continue that trend. See, the trap is to think that one person, namely whoever the presidential candidate is going to change the overall system. And that's what both parties want you to believe. And that's why I disagreed with Limbaugh when he said we need a conservative Republican. I agree they would win with a conservative. That's the major point Limbaugh has been making for many, many, many years. If we'd only run conservatives, we'd win every time, many times with landslides. I more or less agree, but it depends on who that conservative is and if they're truly conservative. Because what happens is many people start out being conservatives or libertarians, believing in liberty and government, and they say that when they're running for the first time, and it's only a matter of a few years, sometimes not even that, before what they say and what they do, there's a distinct difference. They become co-opted by the Washington establishment. And it's not hard to understand how. It's very simple. The leadership in the current House and Senate comes to you and say, if you want to get a good committee assignment, you got to play ball. You got to be a team player. And you got to vote with the party. And most people want to be team players. That's a lot of peer group pressure right there when the leadership meets with you for the first time, individually or in groups, and makes it known how the game's played. It's very difficult for anyone to buck that system. Most people don't want to. They want to go along. They want to be one of the guys or one of the gals. So principles tend to be quickly compromised. And if you have ambitions to, some people want to be chairmen of committees or run for higher public office, such as maybe a governor from the state you're from, or vice president or president, you play the game. And that's what's happened in both parties for decades. Now, what's happened to both parties in the last 100 years, they've moved further and further and further to the so-called left side of the spectrum. My problem with describing that is many people would say the conservatives are on the right side. No, they're not. If they were conservative, they would A, be believing in balanced budget, but more importantly, they would believe in the Constitution that we should have a limited government, and we manifestly do not. I always make the point there are at least 8 to 10 federal departments. I'm not talking agencies. There are a lot of agencies that you can close, but there are at least 8 to 10 departments that you could close down today, and the overwhelming majority of American people would not miss them. Oh, there are certain people that benefit from those departments that would miss them. And I don't mean just the people that work in those departments as administrators or bureaucrats, nor do I just mean the congressmen and that have oversight of those committees and have invested interest in those whatever departments their committee has oversight to see it grow. But it's really what's called the special interest, or what economists call the rent seekers, that wants something out of Washington. In the private sector, in the business sector, if you want to grow your firm, you compete. And if you do it well, the business will come to you and you'll grow. But there will invariably be some businesses and the executives and owners of those businesses that will go to Washington and plead their case for some form of subsidy. It could be a program that they think they can win, or a tax benefit that they think they should have, or a regulation that doesn't make it that expensive for them to run their business. There always will be people, hat in hand, that will go begging to Congress, and both the House and the Senate, wanting something. And representatives and senators play the game. Oh, we'll support you. And it's very clear what the quid pro quo is. You support me on this portion of the law, and you can count on us to provide you with campaign contributions. And that's how it works. Not hard to understand. And what many of our career politicians, what I call the political elitist establishment, play that game. They know that's the game, and they spend a lot of time of their time making phone calls soliciting campaign contributions, as did Mitt Romney, and he quickly found out that Jeb Bush had locked up some of his big donors. Romney saw the handwriting on the wall and thought it was best for him to bow out. Now, I never was a Mitt Romney supporter. The more I checked into him, I concluded he was a nice guy, a gentleman, but he was a progressive, what used to be called a Rockefeller Republican or a country club Republican, today called a Republican in name only. Romney wanted people to believe that he was a conservative and made speeches to that effect. But if you looked at his record, he wasn't. He never was. At best, and this is giving the real benefit of the doubt, he was a centrist. I didn't see him that way. I saw him as left of center. That would say what he thought. He would say what his advisors told him he needed to say to get elected, and he would change his positions. Now, I'm not against people changing their positions if certain facts change, but most principled and consistent politicians, for example, if you truly believe in balanced budgets, don't vote for budgets that are not balanced. And if you believe in limited government, you don't support more and more government spending on whatever, whether it's warfare, defense spending, or welfare programs. See, the problem is this. If you go to Washington as a principled conservative or libertarian, if you want to survive and get reelected under the current party establishment, most people will lose their principles. There are very few that will stick to them. And those have the roughest road to travel. And they have to rely on campaign contributions from their voter base, which means small individual contributions. You can, to some extent, be successful as a representative doing that. But if you have ambitions to run for a statewide office such as senator or a national office such as president, you can't rely on that. It's absolutely essential that you get the big money. And where is the big money? It's in large corporations, large banks, investment banks, commercial banks, law firms. In the Democratic Party, it's also the unions. As Willie Sutton said, who was a bank robber, when asked, why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money's at. So the so-called donor base or donor class is essential if you're going to run for president. That said, it's not monolithic. Just the fact that you have two parties vying for that money tells you that, even though some of the so-called donor base gives money to both parties. They hedge their bets. But they know that politicians can be bought, and that's what's happening here, can be bought cheap. It's a rather small investment of their time and money with big payoffs. So I'm sort of glad that Mitt Romney has bowed out. I was sort of hoping, though, that he wouldn't do that, because then you would have had at least two or three people, maybe even more, vying for that donor base. Now, I know some of you are going to say, well, money isn't everything. I'd be the first one to agree with you. There are a lot of things you need to be successful as a candidate. I summarize that with an acronym called MAMA. You need MAMA. What's MAMA? Everyone has a mama. Well, if you're going to run for president, you need to have mama too. Mama, the M stands for money. The first M is money. The second is organization. The third is message. The fourth is momentum. And the A is ambition. You want the job badly. You have fire in the belly. You want it. You have to have all of those. But to get the ball rolling, you need money. Money can pay for staff and advisors that you need to set up the organization. So to get the money, you need a message that appeals to the people that have the money. The first three, MOM, M-O-M, money, organization, and message are key. Once you have those and you're campaigning for office, then you'll get momentum. And it's assumed that you want the job. And most of these people want the job. Whether they're up for the job is a totally other question. Totally, completely different question. I think many of these people have a very big ego, and it gets bigger when they get a lot of attention. But I'm not convinced that most of them are up to the job, especially when it's the president of the United States. Some would say there's nobody that's really up to that job, and I wouldn't necessarily disagree with them, but others are better prepared either by experience or wisdom to do it. Others are completely out of their depth. They're incompetent. They're not up to the job. And then while they might talk a good game and smile a lot, their incompetence quickly shows in their failed policies, whether it's economic policies domestically or failed foreign policies. And we have a president of the United States today, Barack Obama, whose policies have failed on both counts. He can talk a good game, or rather he can read a speech. I guess in his mind that's essential. But I'm not seeing leadership. I'm not seeing vision. And campaigns are one thing. Running a large organization such as the United States government is quite a different matter. He's not up to the job, and the American people have suffered for that. And history will show that what I've just said is absolutely right. But let's stick with the Republicans for a minute. It's clear to me that the political elitist establishment and their donor base want certain candidates to run and get the nomination. And Jeb Bush leads that list. Now, there are other possibilities, one being Chris Christie of New Jersey. Another potential would be Marco Rubio, Senator Rubio out of Florida. I don't want none of them, period. And I think most likely, I'm guessing here, that Mitt Romney is going to throw his donor base, to the extent he have influence with them, as well as support, to one of those three gentlemen. I have no inside information, but he's going to go along whoever the establishment wants, whoever the big money wants. Now, it's not going to be given to anyone just because they want it. And that's the mistake some candidates make. It's my turn. I'm Jeb Bush. It's my turn. Or I'm Hillary Clinton. It's my turn. No, it doesn't work that way. You have to earn it and convince the American people you're on their side. And that is the trouble that Mitt Romney would have had, as well as Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, as well as Marco Rubio. Because the perception is, no, you're not on our side. You see, there are certain issues that the American people are sensitive on, and they want to see action on. And they feel strongly that their views and concerns are not being addressed. The big one by far is jobs. We have too many Americans that are either unemployed, seeking a full-time permanent job, or underemployed and underpaid, working at part-time jobs that want a full-time job. Now, you'll get ranges of estimates, but it's somewhere between 20 and 30 million. That's a lot of people. When you're talking a workforce, now, if you use the government numbers, you're talking about, ballpark about 150 million. I think if the economy were booming today, that the workforce would be about 160 million, but that's my estimate or opinion. So what we're talking about is nearly 20% of the workforce that needs and wants a good-paying full-time job. And many of those are young people just starting out, looking for their first, second, or third job, working up a career ladder. They're having trouble finding that good, permanent, full-time first job. So no matter who the candidate is, jobs will be issue number one. The economy is also a proxy for that. Some people, if you ask them what the problem is, they'll say the economy. But if you press them, what do they mean by that? They mean there are not enough jobs. Now, the Department of Labor puts out hundreds of statistics every month related to the job situation. The one you usually hear about is the unemployment rate, which has been trending down. But something else has been trending down that should be trending up. What's that? That's how many people are actually participating. In other words, either already employed or looking for a job. That should be about two-thirds, about 67%. Should be the labor participation rate. It's not. Next week, the Department of Labor will put out its monthly surveys of both household and employers, and we'll probably see again that the participation rate is 62.7%. Now, for most people, they don't know what that means. Is that good or bad? I'll tell you, that's bad. That's really bad, because it should be at least 66 to 67% or higher. So a lot of people have become discouraged and are having difficulties finding a good-paying, permanent, full-time job. Now, that doesn't mean the economy is not growing. The economy is growing. It's not as bad as the Great Depression, where roughly at one time, like when FDR was sworn in March of 1933, the estimated unemployment rate was 24.9%. In other words, roughly one out of four Americans wasn't working. And he defeated Hoover, a Republican that was another big government Republican, a country club Republican, a rhino of his day. And Roosevelt, did he fix it? No, he really followed policies very much like Obama is following today. And until really the end of World War II, and up to around 1940, the unemployment rate remained above 14%. Now, they didn't have good statistics then. These are estimates, and I always point that out. You got to be careful. But unemployment still remained high because of wrong-headed economic policies of trying to keep prices up, for example, and keep people employed And as a result of doing that, unemployment remained high. Now, I bring this up for a reason. If you really want to have the economy booming, government needs to get out of the way. Government needs to stop trying to regulate everything, control everything, and stop spending money that people and businesses simply don't have. Jobs in the United States are created by businesses, primarily new small businesses. That's where the jobs are created, the incomes, and the wealth. Business formation is absolutely crucial if you want a growing, thriving economy, where you have many people willing to take the risk to get the reward of starting a business and growing a business, then you're going to have more and more people employed and a growing economy. And that also is to the benefit of the government because you'll have more taxpayers. To the extent that that's not happening, and that's exactly the situation we're in today, you get the situation that we have today of people simply not being able to find jobs, and a stagnating economy in spite of the government. The stimulus package didn't work. Now, what the Democrats were playing at, one way to control people, one way to make them dependent on government, is to provide them various types of transfer payments, where you're taxing one set of people, those that are working and have a successful business, and hand out welfare, and it takes many forms, including food stamps, subsidized housing, a welfare check, and there are dozens of welfare programs, and increase the number of people that are dependent. The problem with that, it quickly degenerates into where people never get back into the workforce. Oh, occasionally they might find a job, but it's not permanent, it doesn't last very long, and they're back on welfare. And that's where we're at today. It's not that people aren't successful. People are successful all over. There is, unfortunately, though, a large number of people, and they're living not from paycheck to paycheck because they're not working. They're literally living from welfare check or food stamps every month, and it makes them dependent on government. It destroys a work ethic. It doesn't inspire people to become ambitious and work hard. And unfortunately, that's where we're at, or a lot of people are at today. They have increasingly become dependent on government because they've been discouraged when they try to find a job and simply cannot find a permanent, good-paying job. I'm not saying there are jobs out there that are not part-time. There are a lot of part-time jobs. But one of the reasons why a lot of employment today is part-time is Obamacare. Employers today are resisting growing their companies. And they have two strategies. One is to keep it less than 50 employees, and the other is to make sure that the employees they have, most of them are part-time, and they're working less than 30 hours. And there's a label for that. The 49ers, those are employers that are trying to keep their payroll under 49 employees, as well as the 29ers, the employees that work 29 hours or less. In other words, they don't have a permanent job. Those are some of the negative consequences of the government interfering in the health insurance market. Really, they're trying to destroy it and replace it by single payer, where the single payer is the government. Now, what you need to understand, the government doesn't like competition. They don't like dissent. They don't like competition. The private sector, some of your big businesses, they don't like competition either. But it's truly competition that drives down the price of goods and services, as well as has increased the quality. It's not because of the government. It's because you have competing businesses or firms trying to get your business. And they know people are sensitive to the price of a good or service. And that is why it's important to have business formation, because it's those new businesses that hire the majority of your net increase in employment is from them, where you get the innovation, you get improvements in quality and improvements in price, namely lower prices. And to the extent that you don't have that and you are eliminating competition, you're going to have higher prices. Why do you think our gasoline prices, except for the last couple of weeks, have been going down? Because we had independent oil exploration and development companies going out, taking a lot of risk and developing various reservoirs across this country, including in Texas, and using technologies such as fracking or hydrofracking and directional drilling or horizontal drilling is another name you'll hear. And because of their efforts, which are rewarded, and virtually all of this was done on private land, the oil reserves as well as the gas reserves, natural gas reserves of this country have dramatically increased, and that has led to falling prices. That's part of the story, but that's just an example of why you want competition. What you don't want is the government intervening in the private sector to try to control prices and wages. They never work, and they lead to shortages. What leads to an expanding supply is competition and the government getting out of the way. And to the extent the government gets out of the way and new businesses are successful, what do? They invest in their company, capital formation. They open more restaurants or more plants or build more buildings to support their operations. And they need capital equipment, machinery, computers, whatever capital they need, they get. And it's largely funded out of their profits from their success and the effort of their employees. Did the government really have anything to do with it? If anything, the government stands in the way. And to the extent you're successful, punishes you by higher taxes and more regulations as you grow bigger. Now, I'm giving you this background for a reason. Both political parties are big government parties. The only difference between the two is where they want to spend not only your money, but future generations' money. That's why we have these huge deficits that have to be financed by debt, namely the issuing of new Treasury securities. And that's over $18 trillion and growing. By 2016, I fully anticipate that the national debt will be over $20 trillion. And they call me extreme. They call the Tea Party extreme. I reject that. The Democrats and the Republicans are the extremists. They got us in this mess, whether it was under George W. Bush or Barack Obama. And it's not getting any better. And they think they've got away with it. Now, getting back to Rush, I agreed with Limbaugh that we need a conservative leader, but not a Republican. And see, that is Rush hang-up, as well as a lot of talk radio host hang-up. Their mindset is they're either Democrats or Republicans. They can't think out of the box. They better start thinking out of the box, because if you think electing, I don't care who the Republican is going to change what we have today, you're sadly mistaken. Because his own party is dominated, the Republican Party is dominated with big spenders. They have absolutely no intention not only of not balancing the budget, but downsizing the government or eliminating any of the departments, such as agriculture, commerce, education, energy, interior, housing and urban development, just to name a few. Homeland Security, with thousands of people standing around, the TSA. Yeah, they want to search all your luggage when you go in and take off your shoes. I thought the name of the game was to catch terrorists, not harass law-abiding Americans. They have the wrong focus. Oh, yeah, occasionally they'll find someone that forgets they have a gun in their suitcase or in their attaché case or has a knife that's a little too long. I'm not against security, but I'm for results and not harassing children and grandmothers or grandfathers or people that have metal in their body. And that means profiling for people that have behaviors that terrorists manifest, not searching everybody. But that's what you get with big government. And an invasion of your privacy by the National Security Agency. See, I support the National Security Agency when it's trying to intercept communications of foreigners in their country or from their country going into the United States. But when they wholesale collect and violate my Fourth Amendment rights to privacy, I oppose them. Yet both the Democrats and Republicans support what the National Security Agency is doing. They're not protecting American citizens. They're not. They're growing a bureaucracy that will spend the money, and that's what it's about. You have firms, software firms, that'll take the NSA's money, and we have a Congress that'll give it to them. I'm not saying it's not needed. It's who they're targeting. Who are they targeting? Americans. So what do we do about it? At some point, and I've said this on past shows, and there's a secret that the Democrats don't want you to know, and neither do the Republicans. People are walking out on both political parties. Both political parties. They've had enough of both political parties. They don't trust them because they've been lied to. They've been manipulated. And they have a narrow choice of candidates that really don't reflect their values or principles. And today, somewhere between 40 and 50% of registered voters consider themselves not Democrats, not Republicans, but independents. Now, I make you aware of that trend for a reason. We have many so-called third parties. Last time I looked, upwards of 24. The problem is they're not successful. They're not viable in the sense that they seldom, if ever, elect anyone. Maybe occasionally on a very local office, they're successful. But in terms of the House, the Senate, or a presidency, there are no real viable, successful third parties. But once independents are consistently over 50% of the voter registrations in this country, more and more people are going to come to the conclusion that I did many years ago, going on 10. Until we have a party that's principled, their candidates have integrity, they truly believe in the principles set forth in the Constitution, in other words, they're for limited government, balanced budgets, and a downsizing, and ultimately an elimination of the debt, until that party comes forward, we'll be stuck with either a Democrat or a Republican. Now, I think that's going to happen. I don't know when, but what I say to you is, don't think, and I think Limbaugh falls into this trap, but a lot of people do. All we need is a conservative Republican president. That's not going to matter. He could be Ronald Reagan times two, but he's not going to do anything because he doesn't have the votes in the House and the Senate to accomplish what he wants to do. You need to have a political party, is my point, where you have candidates that are elected to the House and the Senate, and they're principled. You're always going to get a scoundrel that slips through the vetting process. But eventually, they show their true colors. But if you think the Republican Party is going to downsize this government, balance the budget, and eventually eliminate the national debt, haven't mentioned unfunded liabilities, but and that's another show, you're dreaming. They're not. I'm sure you all have your choice, or you're at least thinking about it. Who would you vote for? I do. I have a short list. I'll tell you who's not on that short list. It's not Jeb Bush. Certainly not Mitt Romney. It's not Chris Christie. Some of them I'm probably are gentlemen, could get along with, but I'm looking for results. Results. And I'm looking for people that represent my philosophy and are right on the issues. Does that mean they agree with me 100%? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I'm not looking for perfection because you never find it. Humans are not perfectible. That's why we have all the evil in this world. If I could find someone that would agree with me 80 to 90% of the time, I'd be happy. And I have a few people that are on my list, but, and this is the big but, every individual has what I call hot button issues or deal breakers. In other words, if you have an opposite view on an issue that I'm really focused in on and serious about, I'm not going to vote for you. Now, I'll give you three. You better balance the budget. You better be fiscally responsible. That eliminates most of the Republican Party and most of those candidates. They're not. They simply are not. They don't make this one of their leading concerns. And there's a reason for it. The political elitist establishment of both parties, the leadership, will crucify you. You'll never accomplish it. Now, some will run saying, I'm a conservative and I believe in fiscal responsibility. And then they'll spend the next 20 or 30 years and there won't be 1 year without a significant major deficit. Hello? You see what I'm driving at? Did anything change? No. One of the complaints of libertarians about Ronald Reagan, and I supported him, and I believe Ronald Reagan was a libertarian. But the problem is, he didn't balance the budget. He ran deficits. Yes, I know he had to contend with a Democratic Congress. But did he change it? No, absolutely not. Did he eliminate any departments? No, absolutely not. You see, results count. And if you're looking for results and people are principled and they can't deliver them, even if they are electable, what have you got? You might as well vote for the other candidate. They always say, don't throw your voter away by voting for a third party. Well, I certainly wouldn't vote for the Democratic Party, but every time I voted for the Republican Party, I didn't get what I was expecting. I have not seen limited government since I've been on this planet, and it's quite a while. And there's a reason. It's not accidental. You have two parties that don't believe in limited government. They believe in big, massive government, growing government. Now, why should you be concerned about this? I believe the American people, the American worker, should keep as much of their money, hard-earned money that they make, as possible. But today, the size of the government, when you add it up, local, state, county, federal, more than 50% of the earnings of productive Americans are going to support government. You are a serf of the government. Even in medieval times, serfs didn't have to give up half of what they produced. But that's what we have today. It's worse in Western Europe, and that's how you're being perceived. You are a serf. You're the sucker that votes either Democrat or Republican. And you think a Republican, conservative candidate is going to change anything? What are you smoking? What are you drinking? What drugs are you on? Don't be naive. Don't fall for that. And I was guilty of that. And most people are. You know why? Because most people have careers, have lives to lead, have families, trying to complete their education, move up. They don't focus on politics. They don't see what the government has turned into. And it's a monster. It is Leviathan. We have today in the United States a warfare welfare state. And if you look at the federal government, that's where the money goes. Welfare programs, entitlement programs, and defense spending. And interest on the national debt. You add all those up, and they're about 70% plus of the entire budget. They make a difference between mandatory spending and discretionary spending, where mandatory spending is money that automatically gets spent because people are entitled to benefits, either Social Security, Medicare, various welfare programs. If you meet the criteria, you get a check. You become dependent on the government. That's how they get you. And you fall for it. And you become a serf, a government serf. Not an employee, a serf. And you send upwards of 50% or more of your money, when you add up all your taxes, to the government. Who are you working for? Are you working for yourself? I was self-employed for many, many years. And I'd have to write those checks. Didn't have a choice. Government coercion. So yeah, I have a short list, but every time I check, and I just did some checking on some people on my short list, I find out, especially the longer they're in Washington, their views seem to change and they become closer and closer to the political elitist establishment. Why? They're ambitious. They want to move up to become president, or if they're in the House, a senator. And why they need voters to do it, they need the donor base to provide them campaign contributions. And that donor base demands certain things. I gave you one hot button. Let me give you the two other ones. One is, I'm very much pro-life. If you're for Planned Parenthood, abortion on demand, anything like that, you'll never get my vote, period. I don't care if you're a libertarian, Republican, or Democrat, or communist, or socialist. If you're pro-abortion, you're never going to get my vote. I consider life to be sacred, and I just won't go along with any candidate that supports that. And that's the majority opinion of the American people. Abortion is not rare. It is commonplace. Over 1 million abortions take place in the United States every year. Over 1,000 a day, all over this country. It's not rare. But that is another example of a hot issue. You have to be fiscally responsible. You have to be pro-life. And I will say, I believe that 70 to 80% somewhere support that view. Some of them, many are Republicans, but many are Democrats. But even more are independents. They believe in fiscal responsibility, and they believe life is sacred, and they don't want this pro-abortion agenda. But there's a third issue that I've had many shows on, is that is immigration, and in particular, illegal immigration. Yes, we are a nation of immigrants, and yes, the majority of the American people, including yours truly, are for immigration. I will qualify it, controlled and limited immigration. And yes, there are things that we could do to improve that. But let me tell you what the overwhelming majority of American people are not for, and that is illegal immigration. They do not support it and want current immigration law enforced. They believe in the rule of law, and they believe if you're here illegally, you've crossed the border, did not present your passport or visa, or came in the country legally and then overstayed your visa, the law is clear, you should be deported. You should not be rewarded by legal status or citizenship. And that, again, is a majority position, a rather large majority. Yet both political parties, the political elitist establishment, want to ignore the will of the American people on all of these three issues. And that is what's happened to many of those Republican candidates that were on my short list. They've gotten real squishy on illegal immigration to the point they're disqualifying themselves. Where I agree with them on most issues, on some of the key issues, fiscal responsibility, pro-life, and deportation for illegal aliens that are here. No exceptions, that's the law. Because all these people broke into our country, got fraudulent documents, and are working here. And what do the Republican leadership, including Jeb Bush and others, they're hardworking. They should be able to stay. We should give them legal status so they can continue working here. What ultimately means citizenship. Why does this concern me? Let's get back to a key point. There are 20 to 30 million Americans today that are looking for a good full-time job, and they can't find it. They can't find it. You see, ladies and gentlemen, it's not 11 or 12 million illegal aliens that are here. It's somewhere between 30 and 50 million. Because for everyone that the U.S. Border Patrol detains and apprehends, 3 to 5, conservatively, make it across the border into cities such as Dallas, sanctuary cities. There are about a dozen states that have most of this, including Florida, including Texas, California, Illinois, New York, New Jersey, North Carolina, Georgia. Big business and the unions are for open borders. And unfortunately, some of the candidates that were on my short list are quickly being deleted. They're getting, as they run for president, they become weaker and weaker and weaker regarding illegal immigration. They suddenly are for granting legal status. Now, what's going on? I'm acutely aware Texas is one state, Florida is another, California. There are states that need agricultural workers. I understand that. And one of the problems is they have visas, come here, but they quickly learn that they could get a better paying job doing other work, so they switch into that. So you have interest in the United States, ranchers, farmers, that want open borders. It provides them with cheap, compliant labor. And that's why many senators and representatives that you might think are against illegal immigration when you start digging in, you find not really, because while they're saying they want secure borders, and they all say that, when you look at the quotas, so the numbers allowed in legally, they want to double and triple them. And most Americans aren't aware that over 1 million foreigners are entering this country legally every year. The American people don't support that. Most of them, several hundred thousand, no problem. 1 million every year, are you kidding me? Yes, and we want to double and triple it. In other words, make the 30 to 50 million that are already here illegally legal. You're being played, you're being manipulated, you're being lied to, you're being sold out by both political parties. The Democrats, they're in it for the voters because they believe, and they're right, they'll get at least 2/3 to 3/4 of those illegal aliens within the next 10 to 15 years, if not sooner, will become registered voters. And who will they compete with? People that were born, raised, and educated here, American citizens. And we want to be fair to the criminal aliens? The illegal aliens that have broken into our country, have bought fraudulent documents or stolen identities, and have worked here illegally, we should reward them with legal status, a work permit, and then a green card? No, absolutely not. Yet that is what both political parties, Democrats and Republicans, want to do. So I think some people are very naive to think that a conservative Republican is going to change the Republican Party. Dream on. Dream on. In my lifetime, there's really been only two conservatives / libertarians, namely Goldwater and Reagan, that ran. We know what happened to Goldwater, but Reagan won with landslides. You see, the Republican establishment is not conservative, and it's not libertarian. They're progressives. They're big government, big spending. That's what they're about. Yeah, they can talk conservative. They know how to make the sounds. But see what they vote for. Year after year after year, deficit after deficit after deficit, war after war after war, more and more welfare programs. They did swear an oath to preserve and protect the Constitution, but they are ignoring the will of the American people over and over again. That's why I am done with not only the Democratic Party that are beyond the pale, but as well the Republican Party. Does that mean there are not some good people in both parties? Yes, there are, mainly in the Republican Party. But even if those good, principled people got elected, what's going to change? And my point is very little. Until you have a party that has candidates that get elected and have votes in the House and the Senate, and ultimately elected as president, you're not going to change anything. The system is presently stacked against any other political party and will remain this way. And the continual drift to bigger and bigger and bigger government will continue until the day the United States government starts to default on its debt, and it'll happen. It's a matter of time. We're heading where Greece is today. Some say we're quickly catching up. One person is not going to change this political system. I don't care how articulate he is, how persuasive and convincing he is, whether he's elected president or senator is not going to change the system, political system in this country. We need a new, successful, viable party with a clear agenda, with candidates not only support the agenda, but have integrity and believe in a constitutional republic. And until we have that party, you're going to get the same results. That's insanity, folks. That is insanity. So yes, Mitt Romney was a gentleman, sterling character. I like him. And the same with Jeb Bush. But what I don't like is what they're turning this country into. I don't agree with their political philosophy. I absolutely oppose it. And you don't have to look that deep to find the issues that are deal breakers. They are deal breakers. Yes, they might be great governors, but you think they're going to change the budgets of this country? Dream on. Do any of them say they want to eliminate 6, 7, 8 departments? No. When Rick Perry ran, he couldn't remember 3. I do have trouble remembering all 10. I haven't practiced it. Believe you me, if I were going on a debate, I could click off 10. But he couldn't even do 3 because his heart wasn't in it. We have a bloated bureaucracy, and that's part of the problem. Because one of the biggest advocates for growing government is the bureaucracy. That's how you get ahead in Washington. Build a bigger organization. Build a bigger department. Have more people, more budget. They're real good spending your hard-earned money. They're not real good in allowing you to keep as much of your hard-earned money as possible. There's a lot of talk about tax reform. It always comes up, and I think it will be an issue. How many people are talking about totally replacing the federal income tax system that's a little over 100 years old with a fair tax or something similar to that? The answer is none. It's not that there aren't some people in the House and the Senate that have indicated in the past and as well as today that they would like it, but they're never going to get it passed as long as you have a Democratic and Republican Party with the majority of the votes. It's never going to happen. Hell will freeze over before it happens. Yet it's the most inefficient way to collect taxes. Its time has passed. There's absolutely no reason why we can't have a fair tax to replace all federal taxes, all personal income taxes, all corporate income taxes, all payroll taxes, all the gift and estate taxes, alternative minimum taxes, capital gains taxes, and taxes on interest and dividends. Wipe it out and replace it with a simple, transparent, easily understood fair tax. I'm not the only one advocating that. It is a broad-based consumption tax. And you wouldn't have to, every April 15th or prior, wrestle, spend hours and days trying to figure out what you owe. Because you would be paying it as you consume new goods and services. How many of the leading Republican candidates are advocating that? There'll probably be one, maybe two, but they're the only ones. And there's a reason for it. Because the others know that the game is rigged. There are too many special interests that like the status quo, like the code as well as the regulations the way it is. They don't want change. They don't want simplification. They want this mess to continue. Yes, it would mean the elimination of the Internal Revenue Service. Uh-oh, can't have that. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to need a few people to make sure the businesses actually turn in the taxes they collect. But a fair tax would mean the United States would be unique in not having a tax on labor and not having a tax on capital. What do you think that would do in terms of business formation as well as capital formation? It would be a major boom. Money would flood from around the world as well as from U.S. corporations that have trillions of dollars that they keep overseas back into the United States. We would have economy growing at 4, 5, 6%. But do the Democratic Party propose this? Never. Would the Republican Party propose this? Never. So I agree with Limbaugh halfway. We do need a conservative, I would say slash libertarian. But if you think Republican is going to do it, you're dreaming. It's never going to happen. Don't waste your time. I used to contribute to the Republican Party. I won't send them a cent. I don't even want to see them, hear them, waste my time. They talk a good game, or at least some of them. They just don't deliver the goods. They make it worse, worse, and worse. You throw your vote away whether you vote Democrat or Republican. And I always say the lesser of two evils is still evil. I'm looking for a successful, viable party that will take on the Republican and Democratic parties. And the core of those people are today independents. And once this ball gets rolling, and state after state this party is formed, you'll have Republicans, and probably even a few Democrats, jump off those sinking ships of big government and swim or get in boats and come to whatever that new party is. But that's what we need. Yeah, I have a list of Republicans that I would like to see run for president. But whenever I dig in and really look at their records, and we do, and the Republican Party has a long list of what on the surface look as good candidates. The problem is on many of the key issues, hot button issues, they simply can't deliver. They can't deliver. Why? The Republican Party. The leadership in the Republican Party would stop them. They're not going to close down departments. They're not going to balance the budget. They're not going to do the heavy lifting. They want to go along to get along, which means bigger and bigger and bigger government. I accuse the Democrats of practicing Santa Claus socialism. They give their voters stuff. Unfortunately, people fall for that. They don't make the connection. Who's paying for this stuff? They are. If I want stuff, I'll pay my own money and get the stuff I want. I don't want anybody giving me stuff. But that's what the Democrats do. And it works. That's their playbook, and it works. Until someone stands up and points out, wait a minute. Yeah, give me free stuff, but it's not free. I pay for it, and I actually pay more than if I just went out and bought it myself. We need candidates that are articulate, that have the money, the organization, the message, the momentum, and ambition. The problem, ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't matter whether they're Democrats or Republicans. You're being sold a bill of goods. You are going to be disappointed. You can have great expectations. You can admire the person, whoever he is, that's your candidate. But if you end up growing the government, paying more taxes, more regulations, has that candidate, Republican candidate, changed anything? That's truly the test. They haven't. The Democrats haven't changed anything, neither the Republicans, other than growing government at all levels. The American people want change, want limited government, but the powers that be, the donor base, the people that provide them the money so they can set up an organization, deliver a message, are not for what the American people need and want. So voting for a conservative candidate, which you probably won't get, or voting for a libertarian candidate, which you won't get, whether he's a Republican or Democrat, is a fool's game. It's a loser's game. Because whoever that individual is, and let's say he gets elected president, how is he going to get his agenda through Congress? The answer is he's not going to be able to. Oh, there'll be some cosmetic window dressing changes. But after he's well out of office, you look back, the government is bigger, the deficits are bigger, the debt is bigger, and there are more government departments. We need a reverse. Americans are saying we're going in the wrong direction. Yeah, we're going in the wrong direction. But do you think voting for your candidate of choice, Republican candidate, or for that matter, Democratic candidate, is going to change anything? You have more ability to change the results of the Super Bowl than this. But I'm still optimistic. I'm a realist, but I'm still optimistic for two reasons. More and more people are leaving both parties. And ultimately, what both parties are doing in this country will lead to the crash of this country. You need more than government to produce things. Governments don't produce anything. They take from one group and give to another. They're not wealth creators. They're not job creators. They're not income creators. They're takers. And you need to wake up to that. They're not out for your good. If anything, they make your situation worse. With that, I need to close the program with America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show, Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College.